Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Alrighty, so our guest in for some podcast conversation today, can you hear me? I'm rubbing my hands together already, is Yani Sapanos. And because Yani is founding director of so many awesome places, he's going to introduce himself. Go for it, Yani. Gorgeous to have you here.
All right. Well, look, just in broad terms, founder and CEO of Core Plus, digital health practice management community, and executive director and founder of Health Tech X, which is a digital health innovation community and collaboration community.
Yeah. Let's get a bit of an update with Core Plus because you guys have been busy. What's news?
Yeah, it's been an incredible year. We're sort of, you know, almost at Christmas at this point in time. So a lot of releases this year. We've been updating. I'll just go through them in no order of priority. But we have introduced what we call a service registration agent, a service registration assistant, as we like to call an industry, the SRA, Kathy. And the SRA is all about empowering Core Plus customers to be able to use their PRODA credentials to authenticate Core Plus so that the profile information of a healthcare provider can be published out to other connected electronically connected healthcare providers, such as GPs and hospitals and consulting specialists in various surgeries, private and public hospitals and the like. So a big part of the problem this addresses is that health providers, when there are changes in their practice, you know, new practitioners coming in, practitioners leaving, for example, or new locations opening up or closing down, it usually requires quite a bit of admin to go off to a whole bunch of portals and update that information. Yeah. So the SRA is designed to basically go one time, make the change, tell the system that there's a new practitioner that's joined the team or there's a practitioner that's left, communicate any addresses that we're providing services from or to, communicate whether we're providing exclusively in-person services or with telehealth, and then publish that out to the Connected Digital Health Network. And what that does is it then populates the directories of GPs around Australia, and they're able to actually do a lookup if they're after an occupational therapist or a psychologist or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. They're able to then do a search and find a Core Plus customer in their directories and then obviously be able to do referrals and send off a referral securely through the system. So the SRAs, it's a bit of a, I think, a game changer in simplifying the way that healthcare practitioners and providers can actually update their information, and secondly, to then publish it. And I use the word publishing carefully because, you know, publishing and advertising sort of go hand in hand, but the Digital Health Network is not really an advertising channel. But by publishing yourself onto it, it means that when another point of care has a need for a healthcare service like yours, they're able to find you. And they're able to then start communicating with you and referring a patient to you. So in a sense, it is a form of advertising, but it's more about the way that we do clinical handover and how that information is exchanged securely and privately between different points of care. So that's the SRA. Have you encountered that problem out in the field?
I can just hear the sigh of relief of practice managers, because that's typically their job of updating and checking all the insurance companies, and on it goes, where these numbers have to, you know, appear and disappear from. So great functionality, and it's just stepping towards this, you know, online marketplace.
It really is, and it also primary health networks are a part of the network as well. So where they run regional programs, for example, and they're looking for allied health providers, by updating the SRA and updating the the national directories that are connected to our digital health network, that means that you've got your most up to date version of your practice presented to whoever might be interested in finding you and sending you a referral. So it's a very cool idea, and I think in the long run it'll sort of become, I'm going to use the term, Kathy, the new normal. But it's going to take a while for it. I think we're definitely leading the charge at the moment. What else can I share with you? We have launched a campaign creator, and this is a response to a lot of feedback we've had from our customers that really like the functionality that tools like HubSpot and other types of CRM or, you know, contact management type systems have provided them, but don't necessarily like having the extra charges that come with it. And so we've incorporated now a framework within Core Plus that allows campaigns to be built, and they can be both in terms of the clinical communication that's needed to intake, onboard, and then follow through in terms of the therapy that's being prescribed, or any other kind of communication, you know, birthdays and the like, and other kinds of campaigns that might be running internally. So we're seeing good interest and good uptake from our client community at the moment, and they're appreciating that they're able to actually standardize and automate some of that communication functionality within the PMS.
I didn't know that. That's exciting. So will it help? Well, how will it help business owners attract new clients?
It won't replace a marketing function, but what it will do is that it will be part of the funnel, if you will, where the typical advertising and marketing functions through Google Ads, social media, events, webinars, education, whatever the approach is that's being used, will attract customers into the practice's sales funnel, for lack of a better term. But then the intake process, the type of contact that you want, FAQs, onboarding type of documentation, any other correspondence, consents, for example, any other correspondence that happens beyond the initial appointment, can all be coordinated through the campaign creator. Because its function is to help you program the timing of certain communication and to be able to work with some of the form builders that are inside Core Plus and some of the integrations that we have with form builders and third-party communication tools. So that's, kind of how it works. Not a replacement to marketing, but helping sort of bring that whole customer relationship management side of it. It may evolve over time to something, you know, bigger and better, but we're really beholden to our customer community and what they want. Mm-hmm. So we'll just follow our customers in terms of what they want there. What else is happening? We've done a release this year with online payments as well, and we're really proud of this integration. It's with a online payment provider called PIN Payments. And what we like about it is that PIN Payments has worked really closely with us to design an experience for the online booking and the online payment framework with our customer's customer that is really simple and easy in order to pay using a credit card or an EFT card. And we've been able to overcome what traditionally with products or integrations like Stripe, which are quite popular in the market, have been quite costly to implement. So that means that we've been able to introduce a lower cost online payment capability for our customers. And it sort of ranges in the order of, 5+ cents per transaction and around about, 0.25 to 0.35% of a transaction. So that offers our customers a great deal of efficiency compared to using alternative payment engines that have been sort of, you know, typically made available out there. What else, Kathy? Not much of a reaction to that. So obviously everyone in your community is happy with the price they pay.
Oh, look, I guess that it's an interesting question because it's about the price you pay for convenience and the price you pay for cash and the ease of use of that gateway. I find it interesting when I sometimes hear, oh my gosh, the transaction fee is X amount or perceived to be too much, where the alternative is you could not get paid in that moment. So I find that just a fascinating conversation.
It really is.
What's that proverb? One in the hand, two in the bush? No, yeah, two in the, yeah. Whatever
in the
that one is.
Two in the bush.
Yeah, that one.
Well, definitely, you know, and I think the, you know, that traditional business value proposition is, you know, if you collect cash, then you've got to actually count it and then take time out of your day to go and deposit it. And there's cost in that. So you factor that in. But the comparison we were looking at is that when we take Stripe is a quite a strong brand in the market and health providers that have enabled online bookings using Stripe as a gateway would know that Stripe's pricing is, you know, 1.75%, for example, plus 30 cents, I think it is. And, you know, some of the software out there that's being used does add on some additional charges as well. And that's their prerogative in terms of how they design their integration. But you're going to be paying a minimum of 1.75 plus 30 cents. And that means that, you know, for any transaction value, say sort of a $100 invoice, you know, you've got 30 cents straight off the bat and then $1.75 coming off that particular side of it. Now, yes, you don't have to count cash, take it, deposit it, do all that. That's really good. But in terms of online payments, how do you differentiate one online payment from the other? There really is only price. And so the PIN payments partnership we put in place is offering 1.55 and 25 cents per transaction. So for the same utility, it's a lower cost. And that's kind of the benefit to our community.
Yeah, a little bit less. Can I ask a question about your observations of how business owners have used their practice management systems, Core Plus, differently during the pandemic?
Yes, they have embraced the telehealth capability. So that's a big difference. That's a standout, obviously. Yeah. But I think generally speaking, we've seen a lot more uptake in online bookings and activating the intake and the online payments and the telehealth capabilities, and really committing to the idea that a modern health practice can do both in person and online. So the in person stuff was pretty well down pat. It had, you know, that was kind of, you know, the core business. And then what we've seen this year is that, you know, the use of Core Plus has moved more towards how do we do more of the online stuff? How do we implement the features that give us that intake, onboarding, consent, sign off, taking payments remotely, being able to deliver, you know, video consults or chat or voice, you know, remotely. That's definitely been a big part. We've also noticed as well that we have an SMS feature that is linked to the communications tools within the product, in addition to scheduling and reminders and stuff. And our character limit with our SMS communication framework is 1,000 characters, and most SMS communication systems are 160 characters. So what we've noticed this year is that our customer community has definitely used more characters seeing the benefit of working with SMS. As a more universal communication standard. So they're probably the observations I'd make.
Yeah. That's interesting about the SMS. It's almost becoming a mini newsletter or a little micro blog out to kind of create and sustain relationships with customers, particularly when you think of Victoria and Melbourne, where, you know, on the day, on the hour, the rules of engagement can be completely different. I've certainly
absolutely
yeah been hearing about the challenges of little and often communication with clients, and the value and the, you know, how does it happen? How do we keep a record of it? How do we know if they've read it? So looking for that functionality in one central place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think with SMS was heavily regulated, particularly around spam. And there was legislation put in place and it was named, and it was kind of went through this evolution where I think direct messaging and some of the other tools, the chat tools, haven't had that level of regulation. So when you look at your Facebook feed or your Instagram feed, there's so much noise that's coming through, and it's very hard to stand out in that communication. Whereas SMS, ping, you look at it, you open it.
Glance most people, and go.
Absolutely. And statistically, the overwhelming majority of people read their SMSs, whereas that's not true of other types of messaging kind of frameworks out there. And the other thing is that SMS is on every single smartphone device, whereas the apps that do chat and messaging aren't. You know, they're choices that consumers make. And some might like WhatsApp, the other one might like, Facebook Messenger, the other one likes Instagram direct message or whatever the case is. So SMS is universal, whereas the others are a risk. Maybe your client has them, maybe they don't. SMS is here to stay. It's going to be here for a long while yet as a low-hanging fruit communication strategy. Our grandparents can use it. Everyone can use it. It's not a hard idea.
Well.
Maybe exceptions.
Well, oh, my gosh. My mum's ability to SMS with emoji and in the right language has improved exponentially this year. So I don't think we've had an umlaut for most of this year, but I don't even know where she finds them. We all just panicked when we saw the emojis appearing. Not all of it makes sense, but it's hilarious. In our in-house family entertainment.
You're making me laugh because...
unlikely that she's listening, but...
You're making me laugh because my mum recently sent me an eggplant. And I had to go into a bit of a counselling session with her, and Mum, if we're going to speak emoji, let's really figure some of this stuff
out. just get some rules. Oh no, yeah. That's a classic. Good that SMS is going to be here for a while, so that aging parents, hopefully with a sense of humour, can sharpen their craft just a little more.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's good. So if we swap hats and kind of get on your health tech hat, what are you dreaming about over there?
Oh, look, there's dreaming and then there's also where we're currently at, and they're both kind of exciting states. But we've had a lot of collaboration activity in the community that is thinking about how digital health works for their particular area of healthcare. So we're really seeing the emergence now of ideas like digital mental health. We're seeing the emergence of ideas like digital occupational therapy. They're kind of a couple of dominant ones that are sort of, leading. But I think the same holds for other types of practitioner types, where we can start to leverage the knowledge. There's been a lot of attempts, a lot of apps. I mean, there are thousands of apps in different types of healthcare professions. But the research is pretty clear that the journey we've been on has kind of been a good experiment. But more often than not, the longitudinal studies and the clinical trials around apps generally outperform the real world. So in the real world, we don't see the same engagement, the same adoption, the same kind of effectiveness with the tools. So those lessons are banked, the things that, might work versus the things that aren't working. So I think we're at a really good point in time where we could actually now start to reimagine the digital health tools and how they work as an enhancement or an augmentation of healthcare delivery or healthcare therapy, and not necessarily as an alternative, because I think there was a period of time where some of the app developers thought that they could just put up an app and it was going to produce outcomes, but it's just not going to work that way. And I'm glad about that, because I really can't see how we have healthcare without people. We've got to have the people involved in the mix, but what we can do is perhaps support adherence or engagement or commitment to therapy using tools that allow that allow that service experience and the I guess the therapy that's being prescribed to be more integrated into the life of that person day to day, and not just strictly speaking subject to an appointment. So that's kind of happening in the community at the moment. There's some pretty cool stuff.
What would be some good examples of that you can legitimately share without, you know, breaking secrets?
That I can actually share at the moment. All right. Well, here's a recent example. This is in the mental health area. So mental health demand for mental health or accessing a mental health has spiked, and there are, you know, well-established consensus that access to mental health care has been a barrier, but now more so than ever, because even when Australians are trying to access mental health care, they're confronted with wait lists. And that's, I suppose, a good problem to have from a business standpoint, but it's not a good problem to have from an Australian standpoint who's trying to get access to mental health care therapy. And so we have been working on a collaboration with a virtual psychology practice that has developed an application framework that helps Australians to be able to answer some questions and be matched in a therapeutic context. There's an algorithm supporting it that allows the presenting issues to be matched against a community of psychologists in this case, and then help support the process of then attending the appointment, setting up some measurements that can actually be used to demonstrate across a timeline improvements in the way the therapy is going with the individual. And that kind of fits into the patient-reported outcome model or the PROM model, including some of the experience measurements that come into it as well on whether the experience is satisfactory for the individual that's going through it. Now, what's really cool about what HealthTechX has done here is that we've been able to work with this virtual practice who was growing just this year. They've grown 700%. It's been incredible. But they can't recruit fast enough. And it's a really big scaling point problem for them in trying to meet the demand and relying on that traditional idea of I've got to recruit and employ in order to meet the demand. So what we did is we worked through a collaboration to take the algorithm and take some of the matching framework and integrate it into the API framework that underpins Core Plus. And what that's allowed us to do, and we've only literally just released this, is provide an opportunity for other Core Plus customers to choose to participate in referrals from this virtual mental health care clinic.
Hub, yeah, great.
Yeah, and that means that virtual mental health care clinic can now get instant access to other psychologists, in this case, who, if they consent, if they so choose, they can publish their schedules and participate in that program. And that is like turnkey scalability for the, you know, virtual healthcare practice. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, love it. I'm excited. The challenge of recruitment needs to be noted. But I guess it's about using technology to network and to access other practitioners who have a spot on Tuesday at 11 that somebody on the other side of the country urgently needs for their ongoing, you know, mental health support. So, yeah, it just sounds as though tech is coming in as the glue and, yeah, forming those partnerships. I think it's amazing.
I think that's kind of the spirit of the HealthTechX project. It's about... Our vision statement is defined as achieving a world of integrated digital health empowerment for all people. And, you know, at a quick glance, you might think that's consumer oriented, and it is, but it's also practitioner oriented, because I think the reality is that when demand is very high for healthcare, we don't just have a recruitment problem, but we potentially also have a burnout problem. And we can't keep inflicting that on our healthcare practitioners all in the name of, you know, it's all about the consumers. So I think consumer-directed care is really important, and those kinds of philosophies are really important, but we need a sustainable healthcare system.
Yeah.
And the recruiting pathway, while still effective, it is hitting a supply-side problem. You know, it is harder and harder. We're hearing more and more reports in the community of practices who are really struggling to recruit. And I'm sure that once supply gets up to a certain level, that'll sort of fall back into its, you know, optimal rhythm. But in the meantime, whilst there are, you know, on one side of the spectrum, there are super busy practices, there are other practices that are not super busy. So the potential here, and this is what really appealed to me in sort of engaging with this idea and working through the collaboration, this is a form of e-referrals. This is a form of alliance building between different points of care, where a small practice over here could make some of its skill capability available to a practice that's over here. Now, that's a really simplistic view, and I know it's a bit more complicated than that because we'll have to also deal with clinical governance and, you know, the brand and the quality issues.
The transactions.
Yeah, this party over here would like to keep in place for themselves whilst they're actually getting another practitioner in the healthcare system to refer through to. And, you know, they're going to hold the billing relationship and the client relationship, and they're going to have some obligations. So this is an experiment, but we are willing to try it, and we are embarking on it in the mental health care sector. But I really think we could transpose some of this thinking into the occupational therapy sector, as well as the speech pathology sector as well. So it's kind of the idea that, yeah, let's get the healthcare system building alliances and building communities and building cooperatives that help, you know, deal with that supply demand challenge, but also cultivate a stronger healthcare system, a more sustainable healthcare system, which also adds value to clients and consumers in terms of their outcomes. So that's kind of where we're at now.
What do you anticipate it will look like? No, what do you think that networking and alliances will look like just in a year's time, this time next year?
Oh, I would like to think that it's just an iteration of where we are now, where we remain open to these types of cooperatives and developing alliances. I think it's well established that we understand that having a strong therapeutic alliance is positive for outcomes between a practitioner and a client. But the healthcare system also needs to develop some alliances and support each other in the process. And that might sound like an opinion or a subjective thing, and that's what it is. But, I mean, when we're talking about vision and the possibility, we need to take stock of what are some of the challenges and problems that we're dealing with at a micro and a macro level, and then allow ourselves to innovate and allow ourselves to try something that perhaps is a little bit outside of the box. And if we've got that mindset, I think it's possible. But, you know, time will tell.
Oh, I think that, make sure that you come back and tell us how that unrolls. I know that there's going to be people listening who that just sparks their curiosity big time, because it creates opportunities, but it also starts to solve other really, really hot, messy problems that a lot of business owners have got.
Sorry, Kathy, it's hot and messy. You got me with that
hot
one.
Hot and messy. Sorry. Yeah.
I lost my composure.
That's all right. It's my job. Just mess with the guests.
Now, I think if we go out a little bit further, let's talk, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years type of thing.
Okay. What's your prediction?
Well, you know, I think, you know, some of us, we might have heard of the idea of digital nomads, and we've seen it in other verticals or in other industries where you know, there are people whose lifestyle is not traditional. You know, they don't necessarily want to live in the same place forever or for a long period of time. They don't want to follow a typical career path. And they want to travel. They want to go to different locations, but they still need to work. So I kind of have this idea that we might see an emergence of a digital health nomad. Namely a person who has skills and capabilities in allied healthcare who would love to work for organisations so long as it doesn't require them to live in a particular location to be able to do that. and allow them to, you know, if they want to travel, you know, inland, regionally, they want to go beachside, they want to go into the mountains, even off the grid, you know, they can do that, but still add value into the system remotely using digital health thinking and digital health concepts. What do you make of that?
Oh, just love it. You knew what my answer was going to be. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but one of my dreams, and I've just realized my dream catcher, it's in the other room at the moment, is to live without a key. So I've had this thing for years about wanting to live without a key. So it means I don't have a door key or a car key or a, I don't know, I'm down to one key at the moment. But to be able to have this freedom of open doors all over the world. So it sparks my imagination and is one of the drivers in my business. If I can calculate the time, I can work anywhere in the world. Just got to calculate the time, and I haven't always done that correctly over the years. But that's, you know, there's an app for that, no doubt. Well, so if, you know, absolutely.
And it's interesting you say there's an app for that, because I really think that part of the evolution and part of the opportunity is to think outside the box like that and sort of say, how can we blend, you know, that kind of real world setting and that digital world setting to continue to help people with their healthcare goals, but also recognize that the world's changing, you know, and this year in particular, I kind of know how you're feeling in part. I'm not sure how the listeners generally feel, but, you know, personally, I've felt a lot of challenge in thinking about what happened to my life and my family's life and, you know, people around me, my team and friends and loved ones. And, you know, we're seeing all these, you know, lockdowns, this loss of control over our lives, this kind of agenda, you know, where there's been sort of a sequence of reactions based on, you know, the pandemic, and that's introduced a great deal of change into our world. And I'm not sure it ends just because there's a vaccine. I think this continues for a period of time. And then given that it's implemented and it continues, it kind of then is the way that we live going forward. And, you know, it's caused a lot of conflicting emotions, you know, people looking at each other with one eye, you know, crossing the street to walk around each other, reevaluating whether they want to remain residents of a city or whether they actually want to move somewhere else. So there's a lot of disruption in our community at the moment socially. And part of that disruption is opportunity to recognize that, you know, if we just think recruiting, and a lot of recruiters talk about employer value proposition or EVP. And, you know, we've sort of gone through that cycle where we throw a lot of beanbags around and fruit bowls and, you know, filtered water and, you know, trendy sort of couches and stuff. And we've really tried to make the employment value
proposition. I didn't see any of that in the Core Plus office. I'll look more carefully next time. Oh, no. Even if you have an office going forward?
We're a hybrid organization. So, you know, the team is, you know, if they choose, they go to a space, but otherwise it's fully remote. But again, you know, you can see we philosophically, we're building our culture in this way because we believe that humans work differently now. And yes, it does. It's not one size fits all. There's definitely some industries and occupations where you have to show up physically, period. That's it. It doesn't work any other way. Totally get it. But healthcare, or at least, you know, some parts of healthcare aren't necessarily constrained by geography. That's not the only way to do it. And if we put our minds to it, we can find ways to enhance that. And so the employer value proposition starts to become, you know, when you work with us, you have flexibility, you can work from anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it opens up, I guess, an opportunity to attract and retain people who perhaps wouldn't have even thought about you because of the way you were doing things traditionally.
Yeah. It's also an interesting sort of retention-ish model as well. I can think of more than one, a bunch of clients who have had teammates that have wanted to go home, and that has meant traveling interstate, but they haven't had to leave work. They are doing the work now interstate through online provision, and it may not be permanent, but it's been fabulous for customer care, and it's meant that the teammate has got back to home base and the environment that they were kind of seeking, but the business owner has had that lovely retention piece as well. So
it's really powerful.
I was asked a really interesting question. I didn't think to ask you for the answer at the time. I should have. But it was around whether a therapist needs to be in Australia to be able to provide claimable services through Medicare or NDIS. Do you happen to know?
No, I don't know off the top of my head. I think I half know, but it's not going to be a reliable answer. I think if that's an Australian resident who happens to be living somewhere else, a citizen of Australia, who is recognised under a professional body or under APRA here in Australia, I think that may be okay. And I think we have some treaties with some countries where one way or the other, we may be blocked from doing that. And I think the US might be one, just off the top of my head, but no.
Good question, that's why I just qualified. Loved it.
Mm. But, I mean, that does open up the digital health nomad idea to the next level. It's not just about moving around Australia or living remotely within Australia. It's about actually then living in other parts of the world and still being able to maintain a relationship. I've got two stories within Core Plus. Where one of our team members had a family matter come up, and they needed to go overseas to where their parents lived, and there was a bit of uncertainty, and that went from taking some leave to then becoming a semi-permanent situation, and that was really easy to accommodate because we were able to support that remote work idea. And it really was just a time zone issue, but everything else just functioned normally. And that was really valuable to that team member because they were able to be physically close to their parents during a time of uncertainty in their personal circumstances and health, but still be able to continue to, work and support their family. So it became this extended, holiday. It wasn't exactly all fun and games because there were some issues going on, but it was, it was almost a year. And that's a really powerful idea. And that's very endearing when you talk about retention and you talk about the value proposition for that individual. The fact that they could do that, it ticked all their boxes. We've even had a situation where one of our team members, we had sponsored. As an employer sponsor, and through that journey towards permanent residency, they changed their mind. They decided that they wanted to, go back to their country of origin and stay with their family. And guess what? There was no problem from our point of view. So we were able to keep our team members, and they can live anywhere they like, and that's very powerful. And they really appreciate it because they recognize that there are companies that are doing this, but it's not exactly the majority. So I think there's a real edge for companies that innovate in this way, that start to think outside the box and recognize that whilst it's hard to recruit people based on the idea that this is where I'm located, this is where you have to come in every day, when you break that paradigm and you think outside the box, you'll find another group of people who would work for you if they didn't have to do that. And that's the power of opening up our minds and thinking digital health or digital health nomads.
Banish the bricks and mortar as the only way to deliver services. Mm. Well, we've got a couple of minutes.
Wow.
What else should we add into the digital nomad piece?
The digital health nomad. I think some of the verticals of allied health that I think are ripe for it are mental health, occupational therapy, and speech pathology. I think there's so much demand for those services at the moment that this could actually just be a really logical step to try and address that and work through the cooperative model by partnering with practitioners rather than just looking at it as an employment opportunity. I'd certainly welcome anyone who wants to talk about that in those verticals and explore how their virtual or hybrid healthcare service delivery model might benefit from some of this thinking.
I think it's also good to remember that allied health service delivery is not only the one-to-one and the work down the little white light, that there is tremendous value with roundtable meetings with the customer in terms of goal setting and program design and outcome measurement, and getting that real life roundtable, I know, has been absolutely ramped up with many of the clients that we're serving, that it's a Zoom meeting and it doesn't have to be an hour. This mythical 60-minute meeting, which I've nearly always loathed, you can jump on for 20 minutes. There aren't the travel fees associated, but the care and the outcomes of those meetings can be remarkable in terms of the way the client is then participating in life and making progress on their health journey as well. So it's way more than just therapy.
100%. And for those people who have really experienced remote work fully, your productivity is better than being in an office, because there is a lot of inefficient use of time in an office context. And you're geared towards remote because you have, complementary things in your balance. You want to spend more time with your children, with your wife or husband or partner. There's a project going on in the garage. There's a variety of things that define you that, strictly speaking, are not just work. And so being able to use our scarce resource of time and in a more optimal way to design our lives is very powerful and very valuable. And I think that in the long run, there's a lot of this will become more of a dominant paradigm. But I think we're in early days. We have been for a while, but this is a digital transformation event. The coming years ahead of us will be all about thinking outside the box in areas where we hit problems like this, where the geography and the location is part of the problem. It's the barrier.
Yeah.
And we need to overcome that. And it doesn't replace everything. It doesn't. There's still a lot of value in the in-person traditional model, but I'm describing an augmentation or an enhancement to modernizing healthcare with this type of thinking.
Yeah. Whilst that is the most perfect comment to finish this conversation on, and we absolutely need to finish, all I want to know now is, what is the project going on in the garage?
My motorbike needs a good service, and I'll probably got to take it out into the hills and give it a good fang. It's been a little bit too long.
Wonderful, wonderful. That sounds good. I'm so glad I asked. Alrighty, thank you as always, Yani. Always just a bright blue conversation. So we'll get you back next year to find out how the alliances are emerging and tightening around customers, and also about the digital nomad. I'm sure one of us will probably hear from some after this conversation.
Digital health nomads. If that piques your interest, definitely come and have a chat with me, and we can explore how to make that a reality for some people.
Yeah. I think I might have even purchased the URL Life Without a Key. I better go and check whether I got it.
I love that idea.
Might be useful. We can talk about that next time. I've actually got two keys, one for the car and one for the post office box. I can't convince the post office to just let me have my mail over the counter. Apparently there's laws, but down to two.
It's pretty good. I think you've done a good job there.
Yeah. Two to go. Alrighty, have a good one.
Have a great day. Speak soon, Kathy.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.